Everything's on fire in the NFL. We don't know what's going on. There are leaves, spankings, and punchings, and I don't know what to do. Welcome to 22 Weeks. I'm Matt Ryan. Welcome to the third episode. We're still on the air, boys. We're still on the air, and we're also on Stitcher, as well as iTunes and PlaceToBeNation.com. So go to all those websites and support the show. I'm your host, Matt Ryan, and this week on the show, I am joined by my panel of pigskin prognostication, Matthew Foster.
Hello.
Alex Soberman.
Hi.
Tom Garrett.
Great to be here, guys.
And Marvin Williams is on assignment. No, literally, he's on assignment from the United States Coast Guard. That's the only reason why he's not on this show this week.
Is there anything that man hasn't done?
Yahtzee. This week on the show, we will be joined by the managing editor of the Miami Dolphins section, Daniel Ellison, of Cover 32. He'll be talking Miami Dolphins football with us. Also, we'll be joined in the second half of the show by Brian Catalano, fantasy football expert and Jets fan. We'll be talking the Jets and fantasy football in the second part of the show. Mainly, it's going to be me, Foster, Soberman, and possibly Tom, lamenting about how fantasy football has killed our soul slowly and surely.
I won our league last year. I don't know what you're talking about.
Shut your mouth, boy.
I thought Matt lost our league last year.
He did.
Yeah.
Yeah, we never got.
We never renamed his team. He's using the same team name from last year.
Yeah, well, you know what? This week on the show, we will rename my fantasy team. I will do
The Aaron Hernandez Defense Fund.
We'll get to that a little later in the show.
Warning, this show may contain some coarse language. Listener discretion advised.
And on that note, we have a huge announcement for our guest next week. I'm going to hint to it right now. Pro Football Hall of Famer, and played in Super Bowl I. So he'll be joining us next week on the show. I'll make that announcement a little bit later on.
Vince Soberman, I didn't hear that part.
Soberman, you are the tractor trailer to my broken down Pinto in the middle of the road.
Don't worry, he's probably worse.
On that note, our first topic of the week, the NFL, and especially in Washington, D.C., has gone insane. Robert Griffin III dislocated his ankle last week in the Washington Redskins game against, I believe, Jacksonville. And it seems like the entire world has gone upside down on the Beltway. Tom, can you just fill us in on what's going on down there?
Yeah, as usual, major overreactions, but that's pretty much what the media does. I don't have to tell you guys this. You're up in New York where it's even more potent than it is down here.
And we're technically the media.
Well, I always, even though I write for a couple of sites, I'm a self-loathing media member, I guess, because I always distance myself from that label. But
yeah,
basically, I mean, all it took was I wrote an article about this that, as if you're listening to this, it should be up by now on hogshaven.com. As we're recording, it is not. But within 24 hours, Mike Wise of the Washington Post had written a column saying that this is not the injury part, but Cousins starting is what Jay Gruden wanted all along, and that, you know, an anonymous source had said that Gruden thought that Kirk Cousins was a better fit for the offense, and that this was he stopped short of saying it was a blessing in disguise, but at the same time, that was the implication, was that Cousins is going to flourish in a way that Griffin wouldn't in this offense. A day after that, the Washington Post ran an article saying, what's Robert Griffin III's trade value? Can the Redskins get a package of picks, I should say, back for him comparable to what they gave up to the Rams to get him in the first place? It just take whatever level of insanity you would expect and then square it, and that's where we are already. Again, Kirk Cousins, I like both these guys. As a Redskins fan, I like both these guys. I really do. I think they're both solid. I think Kirk Cousins is a solid human being, and I think a good, let's say a serviceable starter, a very good backup in the NFL. But here's the thing. People have already started to talk like he is going to lead the Redskins to the Super Bowl. Now, part of that is Redskins fans' insanity. And part of it, I think, is this inherent contrarianism that there always is in the media. Like, if you look at Robert Griffin III, what he can do physically, his skill set, what he's done in the NFL, his body of work, and then you look at Kirk Cousins, an objective observer would say, Robert Griffin III is the better quarterback of the two. Yes, Kirk Cousins does certain things well, no question, and this system's a good fit for him. Robert Griffin III is the better quarterback. But I think with the media, it's like the grass is always greener. The Cousins is going to be the guy of the future. let me just say this, and then I'll shut up. I'll end this rant. The key to remember about Kirk Cousins is he started the last month of the season last year, and he threw four touchdown passes, seven interceptions, four touchdown passes, and they lost all three games that he started. So I just have to wonder that if they're complaining about Robert Griffin III because he's not what he was his rookie year, allegedly, do you want a guy whose quarterback rating was like a 58? I mean, is that the guy you think is going to be the savior? Again, I'm with the people who say he's going to do better this year. Absolutely. But we need to put things in perspective.
Is it, and I don't mean to be that guy, but is it because Robert Griffin III is black and Cousins is white? Because it's just weird to me that you would get this guy, All-American, two-sport athlete from Baylor, Heisman Trophy winner, brought that school out of relative obscurity into a national powerhouse, and he's your first, you traded two first-round picks to the Rams for him. Why in, and he had a great first year. His second year he had injuries, and that's just bound to happen, and you're having a second season slump no matter what. That's just how football kind of shakes out for the most part. But as a person who has had quarterback controversies in his city that are completely unfounded, it's because of the cult of personality of one person, but it doesn't seem like Kirk Cousins has any real personality that's discernible from the outside world. It just makes no damn sense.
I think it's a valid question to ask, and I've thought about it, but I would say no. I really do think that if the situation had been reversed, like if they had, let's say that the Redskins had gotten Andrew Luck, and they had Andrew Luck, and their backup quarterback happened to be a black guy, I think that the exact same thing would be happening right now, the same type of craziness. And the reason I say that is because you have to understand, you know, the population in D.C., the Redskins fan base, especially up in D.C., is predominantly black, I would say, if not, you know, close to predominantly black. And then the other thing that you hear a lot are all these kind of pot stirring articles about, well, I mean, you saw it in the off season, there was a big article about this about 2 weeks before the season started, I think, after the third preseason game, maybe, when Robert Griffin III didn't play particularly well. You know, the articles would say things like, well, he's lost the locker room, or the team doesn't have his back anymore. And you know, I have a feeling that if there were a racial component in play, that it would be unlikely that the Redskins locker room would be turning against Robert Griffin III for that reason. I completely understand why people raise that issue, but I really don't think that, like, the columnists at the Washington Post or his teammates or the majority of the fan base is going to look at it from that perspective, or is kind of drumming things up from that perspective. I think that it really is just a matter of, you know, the old cliche about the most popular guy in town is always the backup quarterback. I really think it's a function of that. And to be fair, I mean, again, Kirk Cousins has looked good in preseason. As I had to explain 100 times, you have to understand that Kirk Cousins, again, solid player, but he has looked good against backups, and the Jaguars are essentially backup guys. I mean, they're the worst team in the NFL. I think
that the best team in the FXFL would have a good shot against the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, now I will say this though, and this is one thing I think that is a good thing for Kirk Cousins. Again, good fit for the system. The system is designed for the ground up for a pocket passer. But also you have to remember, when Griffin didn't do as well last year, definitely partially due to the injury, but also the Redskins as a team were just not very good. The defense was terrible the first half of the season. Special teams were historically bad all season. And the receiving core, that's the other part of this. The Redskins receiving core is legitimately 4 or 5 deep, where they have solid guys that they can throw in there and be very effective playmakers. That's really going to help Cousins out. That's something he did not have at his disposal last year.
Well, Tom, let me ask you a question. You know, we were, you know, kind of maybe coalescing with what Matt was saying about, you know, one, I will say this. I did do a look, and the majority of NFL quarterbacks are white. I mean, the race is really not so much an issue. I don't think it's the replacing of a white guy with a black guy or anything so much to do like that. But you do, there is just a, if you just count up the 32 starting quarterbacks, you can see that there is a majority of them are white. But do you think that right now the basic feeling amongst Redskins fan is, well, great, they're talking about us, but it's not negative right now? Because the Redskins is just, that was like the controversy before the controversy started this season.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I can tell you that we are kind of, where I am in Richmond, we're a little bit insulated from it. Now, of course, if you go on the internet, of course, for any length of time, you're going to see it. But you have to understand that around here, you know, I would say overwhelmingly, there is, of course, support for the Redskins. And even with that, I will admit there is a little bit of a fatigue factor in terms of the negative coverage that the team gets, whether it's the nickname thing, whether it's just, forget about the nickname, but just Dan Snyder in general.
Yeah, just anytime Dan Snyder opens his mouth.
Yeah, I mean, just and that's not new. That's not something that has, you know, bubbled up in the last year. I mean, this is stuff that goes back a decade plus. Mm-hmm. And I think you're right. I think that there is I'll put it this way. There was a lot of talk last year about, boy, the Redskins are irrelevant again. Because we had the 1 year in 2012 where the Redskins won the division, and all of a sudden it was like, wow, that, you know, the glory days are, if they might not be back yet, but they're coming back. And then 2013 rather was a disaster. And there is this feeling that since Snyder has taken over the team for almost his entire tenure, Washington has gone from being, in our youth, one of the premier teams in the NFL, perennial title contender, to a team that is simply not relevant. And I think that, to your point, there is kind of a, well, now that we're talking about, we have two good quarterbacks. That's a great problem to have. We have a guy who was the rookie of the year in the NFL, and we have another guy who a lot of people think is going to be better, is going to have a better career, which to me is a little nuts for the reason we said before. But I mean, that is something that at least the fan base, even if it's frustrating to be like, if you have a strong opinion one or the other, it's frustrating to talk about it. It's at least exciting because it's like, man, we have two good players that we think can get the job done. Who's going to be the guy? That's a lot more exciting to talk about than is our nickname offensive, or on the football standpoint, like, man, when is Mike Shanahan going to get fired? Like, that's really depressing. Man, we just lost by 5-6 touchdowns to the Chiefs and looked awful. And we still have 3 weeks to go in the season or whatever it was. And this is a much more enjoyable, from that standpoint, conversation to be having.
Do you think Dan Snyder's going to hire Joe Gibbs again?
I am the biggest Joe Gibbs apologist in the history of Joe Gibbs apologists. but even I would be like, come on, the guy. I mean, you see him in interviews now, and he's even his second tenure. If you heard him talk, he sounded all right. Now it's like, man, he is an old guy. I mean, he's tired. He's diabetic. I mean, but of course, I knew you were kidding with that question. But I'll take any opportunity to talk about Joe Gibbs if I'm
you know. But it, well, actually, I lived down there at the very end of the second tenure, and when they said, you know, when he announced he was going, people were like half of people were like, well, you know, he's good, you know, we love Joe Gibbs, whatever he does is great, you know. And second of it's like, oh, we're gonna suck again, you know. It's like, but really, it doesn't matter because they said, oh, Joe Gibbs is great, but we're still owned by Dan Snyder, so there's nothing we
Correct.
Can do.
Is Dan Snyder the – I don't mean to break in, but I have a question, and I want to pose it to everybody here. Is Dan Snyder the worst owner in the National Football League? And if he is not, who is? I'll start with Foster.
I think you can make an argument that Dan Snyder is the worst owner in the NFL. I don't even know. Like, I want to say number two is Jarrett, but that's a lie because he at least cares.
Yeah, but he cares so much that he cares so much that he won't look past his own ego. That's
well,
the
he's
problem.
An egomaniac. He's a billionaire. That's what billionaires are.
The reason why he's not on the show this year, he held out. He legitimately held out.
Patricia has actually been crying for like the last week.
It's not a good thing. It's not a good thing. Alex.
Well, one, Jarrah is not on the show. He held out, but also there's that legal trouble he's in. His lawyers won't let him appear. But is he the worst owner in the – who's the worst owner in the NFL? We could – there's so many debates. Jerry Jones is up there in the sense of he's one of the few people who has the ego enough to be his own general manager. You have to – even Dan Snyder hired somebody.
You're comparing him to Halas.
No. George, there's a difference. You can be your own general manager and be good at it. But if when you're your own general manager and you've sucked continuously and you decide, I think I'm going to just, you know, keep riding this pony. You know, you have to just say, you know, there's an ego here, but I will say there is one man that we very rarely talk about, who's kind of stays down in the gutters of things, and he is truly a terrible owner, and that man is Mike Brown.
Really? Have you looked at how well, aside from the blackout thing, on the field they're great, everywhere else? Sublime mediocrity. It is sublime in how mediocre that franchise is at everything except winning football games, and even at then, they are a bland house paint drying franchise.
Okay, well, I'll throw this out there. Let's just take a look at Mike Brown. One, he hires his entire family to run everything in the team. He pretty much just nepotism is like not the exception but the rule.
How is that different with any other sports franchise?
Because they're putting them. He's putting his own family in charge of like football operations.
The Giants,
except for a somebody. No.
The Cowboys, the Raiders. Let's see. I think the Vikings, the Patriots. Bob Kraft's kid has a hand in running the team and the soccer team. So that argument, and dude, the team you root for in baseball does it. The Giants do it. There are three generations of
Maris. There's a difference between ownership and actually running the day-to-day operations on the on-field product. There's a difference. I'm not talking about working in the main office. I'm talking he hires his family to actually run football operations versus, you know, competent people.
Well, there's several people who have done that.
Okay, and then there's also, I'll throw this out there. Have you ever heard of the Carl Pickens Clause?
Refresh my memory on that.
Carl Pickens was a player who basically, went out, he made a comment or so about the Bengals, even though he was a great player, he made a comment about it and Brown just traded him. So basically what they do is they're feeling what the idea is. It doesn't, you know, no matter what your on-field worth is nothing compared to your loyalty to the team. And by loyalty, meaning not saying shit in the press. You know,
that's actually a really fair point, Alex. And that's something that we can consider. I think this is going to be a poll that we put up on Twitter at 22 Weeks Pod. But Tom, I want to get your points.
Oh, and I almost forgot one last thing. He also bankrupted the city of Cincinnati by, you know, shanghaiing them to a stadium deal they couldn't afford.
Well, they also voted for Jerry Springer as mayor, so they really don't make the best decisions.
I've heard that somewhere before, but it had nothing to do with football. Ugh.
Tom, your comments before we go to break.
Yeah, I think that, first of all, let me just say, that's always one of my favorite moves when somebody asks you if you know what something is. I do this myself. And you pull the move where you say, where you don't, you obviously don't know, but you say, refresh my memory, implying that, yeah, I know this, but I want to hear you say it.
Look, don't erode the pomposity and grandiose pedestal I put myself on as the host and producer of this show. I can edit it all out.
To answer your question, I think that Dan Snyder, without question, for most of his tenure, was the worst owner in the NFL. But what I can tell you from the standpoint of somebody who follows the team, obviously, real closely, the last couple of years, I think I would maybe go even as far as to say he's learned, if not big lessons, at least some small lessons. I mean, you remember, if you guys are longtime fans of the NFL, when he first got there, he was trying to assemble like a fantasy team based on guys who had been good, you know, 5 to 10 years earlier. And it was a disaster. And he was very hands-on. He was very involved. He has not been like that since the beginning of Shanahan was really the turning point. When he hired Shanahan, Shanahan said, look, I'm not going to come coach your team if you get involved as you have with guys in the past. And other than Joe Gibbs, who he was deferential to, he really had been very meddlesome during the tenures of all those other coaches. Shanahan kind of turned that page. And then by the time Shanahan left, you know, Snyder had obviously gotten on board with the idea of let's have a real GM. Let's not have a puppet. Let's have, you know, Bruce Allen come in and do what he did in Tampa Bay, et cetera. So I think, to answer your question, not anymore, but he's near the bottom, but he's not the worst anymore. If I had to pick a worst, I would say Jimmy Haslam in Cleveland, just because they are just a cluster of an organization. And if you want to talk off-field stuff, I mean, he made his money with a company called Pilot Flying J Truck Stop, I think is the name of the company, yes, which is he and the company are currently, if I remember correctly, are currently under investigation because they swindled customers out of money or something.
They took away rebates or discounts.
Yeah, something like that. So
and
I
filled their own pockets with them.
right. So I think that if you want to talk on field, off field, I think he's pretty bad. I mean, to something that was raised earlier, Jerry Jones, I think his problem, and to an extent Snyder's problem, is that not that they don't care, but that they care too much and they get too involved. I think with Haslam, he's just, I mean, football-wise, they have been, gosh, how many different coaches have they had just since he's been the owner the last 3 years? I mean, three different coaches?
They
three
have years? Mike Pettine now, Chudzinski yeah. before that, and who was
it was Romeo Crennel,
it
right?
It was Crennel. That poor bastard.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think he is the leader in the clubhouse, granted small sample size. But he would be my pick for worst, but we'll see.
You know what? I all three make a lot of sense. Woody Johnson is up there for me personally. I don't think he's that good. I think he exemplifies everything about the Napoleonic complex and the little brother complex. He makes Robert Irsay look nice and rational. And like an owner who cares about football.
Well, if we want to make a quick wrap up of this, I can tell you that our good friends at Cover32.com did a power ranking of the owners for this year. It's kind of off because it does include Ralph Wilson. This was before he died. I don't know if he now drops down to number 32, being that he is not alive. But they agree with you saying Jimmy Haslam, Tom. But they said Jimmy Haslam is the worst. But number 31 is one we didn't think of, but it kind of makes sense. And that would be Mark Davis of the Oakland Raiders.
I can see that, yeah. But I think that's a completely different situation. And you know what?
Yeah.
We'll pick up this conversation with Brian Catalano in our third segment of the show. When we come back, we'll be talking to Daniel Ellison of Cover32.com. This is the 22 Weeks Podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, PlaceToBeNation.com.
Hey, football fans, 22 Weeks is a fan-supported podcast. If you want to help 22 Weeks, click the sponsors link on our episode page on PlaceToBeNation.com. This week, get great deals from Amazon.com so you can gear up for game day. For more information, click the Amazon link on this week's episode. Do you want to be a sponsor? Email 22weekspodcast@gmail.com. The numbers, not the letters. That's 22weekspodcast@gmail.com with the subject line sponsors.
Dig through the trash. Sleep on the grates. And watch for the cars. With the counterfeit floor.
It's time for the Cover 32 section of 22 Weeks. I'm Matt Ryan, and I'm joined by the managing editor of the Miami Dolphins section, Daniel Ellison. Daniel, welcome to 22 Weeks.
Hi, thanks for having me. Looking forward to it.
Miami started out strong week one against New England, came out with a big victory. Now they're going up against the Kansas City Chiefs. They are at 1-1 on the season. They lost to Buffalo last week, 29-10. Didn't get that much out of rushing yards. C.J. Spiller was the leading rusher with that game with only 69 yards. You got to look at this as a pretty big pickle for Joe Philbin and the Miami Dolphins heading into week three.
I think you're seeing a lot of the same out of the Dolphins, a little inconsistency. You know, you saw it last year when they were in perfect position to make the playoffs, beating New England again, and then they fell down the stretch losing to Buffalo and New York in the final two games of the season. You're already seeing it this year with some of the inconsistencies where they can start out strong and play good teams well. And then not to say that Buffalo isn't a good team, because I think they're built pretty well. They just need the quarterback, but they just don't come to play when they need to sometimes. I think you'll see a little bit of a different story this upcoming Sunday. I like the matchup for Miami. I think they match up pretty well. You know, you brought up they were able to hold down the running game between Spiller and Jackson last week. I think in the NFL right now, there might not be a stronger starting four men on the D-line in terms of run D right now that Miami holds, and that's really KC's strength. You're also going to get a banged up Jamaal Charles if he even does play. Maybe they might roll in Nile Davis as a starter. We'll have to see how that goes. But I like Miami's chances this Sunday. I think it'll be a good bounce-back opportunity. They're bringing in an aqua out, like many of you might have heard of, a white out in stadium before. They're giving out 65,000 aqua t-shirts, and they're gonna, I think the place will be pretty loud for once.
You got to hope so, because this AFC East heading into week three seems still pretty wide open. New England every year is the presumptive AFC East champion, but you look at Buffalo having a good week one and a decent team on paper, with the exception of quarterback, which you mentioned earlier. The Jets defense being stout and coming one missed timeout away from beating Green Bay in Green Bay. You've got this Miami team that is, as of now, 10th in rushing, in the middle of the road on defense, 15th in pass, 13th in rushing, but only 24th in pass yards. A lot of people thought Ryan Tannehill was going to have a breakout season this year. So far, it's been the same as it ever was. Do you think Tannehill is going to rise to be one of the top 10-5 quarterbacks in the NFL?
I think it's a top five for sure not. I think that's a little bit of a stretch. That being said, I think the jury's still out. You know, this is his year to prove it. You know, not a great opening two games. He's come out and said it himself. He's not happy with how he's playing. A lot of easy throws to the flats he's been missing. I think ball placement's been a real issue for Tannehill in the first two games, just not getting a clean enough ball. If you looked at how they played New England, though, they were able to get the run game going and get a nice balanced offense. He felt more comfortable in that second half when the run game started. And I think he's a quarterback that needs a little bit of help. I think if he can get a run game going, get a play action going, I think he's sneaky athletic, as a lot of people like to call these quarterbacks these days. He's got quick legs and he can get moving around the pocket, and I think if they put him in the right position, he can succeed. That being said, it's still a work in progress, and it's still a big question mark.
It certainly is. Next week, you guys take it on the road to Wembley Stadium against the Raiders. That right there, the London games have been a big source of anger and frustration for teams and fans who don't think it's a fair advantage for the teams going to England. But you have the little minute advantage against Oakland, because they have to come from all the way to the West Coast, and you guys are coming from the East Coast. Do you think that will be a positive for the Dolphins, or do you think that really doesn't matter?
I think the biggest positive is that they get to face the Raiders, and that's a positive in and of itself. But I think Miami also has a pretty decent following up in the UK. We've played there before. We played the Giants, forget when it was, I think a couple of years ago, maybe 5-6 years ago. And I think there's a strong Dolphin fan base out there, I think, that will show up on Sunday. And I think Miami has a legitimate shot to enter the bye 3-1. And I'm pretty sure if you offer that to any fan before the season, they would have signed up right away.
It is really – it's not necessarily surprising to me, because I thought Miami was going to have a much better season, less issues, there's less controversy, even though Dolphins defensive end Deion Jordan was suspended for 4 games for a violation of the NFL substance abuse policy. That is a small, small problem compared to some of the problems the Dolphins faced last year and compared to other teams this year. It's really exciting to see the AFC East turned into a 4-team race instead of the usual, we just all wait to see what New England does and if any of those teams can try to get the wild card.
Well, I don't think you should get too ahead of yourself out there. I think New England still is the cream of the crop right now. And until someone knocks them down, I think you still got to look up the ladder and see them there. That being said, I do think it'll be more competitive in years past. But it's kind of always been a weird division, you know. Buffalo, Miami, and the Jets. If one of those teams can find consistency and win the games they're supposed to win, I think then you'll start seeing maybe a little bit more competition. The issue with, I think, a lot of these three teams is they play strong, they play well, they surprise people, they got everyone's attention, and then they come up flat next week. So, you know, we're week 3. We'll see how this season lines up. It's a pretty weak AFC like it has been the past couple of years. I think there could be a potential second team out of the AFC making the playoffs this year, which wouldn't be where a lot of people had them, though.
It's certainly going to be interesting. And final question to you, Daniel. What is the one player that non-Dolphins fans need to know about? Who's that one guy that's set to break out on the Dolphins that people in Chicago or Detroit don't know about yet?
I think a guy, Randy Starks, doesn't get a lot of credit, but he was just re-signed by the Dolphins, and I think he is probably a top 5 to top 10 at worst case defensive tackle in the league. He doesn't really get the credit that a Cam Wake does, but the guy's a pretty special player. He's made a couple of Pro Bowls, and he gets the job done. Another guy is an up-and-coming star, is Olivier Vernon out of the U, and he's been the second biggest sack master on the squad after Cam Wake. He had the benefit of playing on the opposite side, so that always helps. I think he's another sneaky guy that a lot of people don't know about that's made a presence. He had, I think, around 14.5 sacks last year, so nothing to laugh about there.
All right, Daniel Ellison, where can we find you on Twitter?
I got Ellison_cover32, and then I'm managing the Dolphins Cover 32 Miami Twitter page as well.
Fantastic. Daniel, thank you so much for joining us.
Yes, take it easy, guys.
We'll be back with more 22 Weeks right after this.
Do you have questions for the guys? You can contact them anytime on Twitter at 22weekspod. That's the numbers, not the letters. Do you have a topic or a suggestion for the show? Email them at 22weekspodcast@gmail.com. That's the numbers, not the letters.
Thanks to Daniel Ellison, the managing editor of the Miami Dolphins department of Cover32.com. You can read Daniel's as well as Tom Garrett's articles on Cover32.com. Welcome back to 22 Weeks. I'm Matt Ryan. I'm being joined by the panel of Pigskin Prognostication featuring Matt Foster.
Hello.
Alex Soberman. Who died in a plane crash over the Sea of Japan. You also are now in a cave. You are in a very deep cave, my friend.
I actually am. I was thrown into a cave.
Much like the Giants' hopes of making the playoffs this season. Also joining us, Tom Garrett.
Still here. Got to upgrade that dial-up.
And joining us now, our new fantasy expert on 22 Weeks and a new friend of the show, Brian Catalano. Brian, thank you for joining us on the show.
Thank you for having me.
All right, so we're going to continue our conversation about the best and worst owners in the NFL. Soberman has some really great stats from the power rankings on Cover32.com, but I want to announce next week on the show, joining us to promote his new scrapbook, NFL superstar, Pro Football Hall of Famer, and one of the most compelling people in the history of the National Football League, Paul Hornung, will join the show next week right here on 22 Weeks, and we'll have more guests coming up throughout the next couple of weeks, including Jerry Eisenberg, Christine Clark, possibly Phil Villapiano from the Oakland Raiders, and a whole lot more. But next week, Paul Hornung will join us right here on 22 Weeks. Back now to our conversation regarding owners before we go to who you got in our conversation about fantasy football. Soberman, who are the top 5 owners in that power ranking?
Well, I will just recap real quick for those of you just joining us that the worst owner rated here was Jimmy Haslam, and the second worst was Mark Davis. And by the way, my pick, Mike Brown, was number 30. So getting over to the question of who are the top 5 best, We'll start with number five. They're going with actually, this is another one that we – I don't know how we can count it. It's Pat Bowlen of the Denver Broncos. But he is no longer the owner of the team. He has passed that off due to his battle with Alzheimer's. So I don't know where you want to
Well, you can just put the Bowlen family.
Yeah, Bowlen family. Number four is the board of directors of the Green Bay Packers, the only publicly owned franchise in pro sports, which is interesting because my brother actually is an owner. So I guess I would say I'm a little biased on that one. Number three, Paul Allen of the Seattle Seahawks.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Number two is one that I hate personally, but makes sense. And that would be Robert Kraft of the Patriots.
He's a mighty fine owner.
He's a dick, but a great owner.
He's the reason why the Cold War got reignited.
That's right.
Kinda. Putin, give back his ring.
It's nice ring. It's going nowhere.
It's Putin ring now. and the number one, who wants to take a guess as to number one?
George Halas.
He's dead.
let's see here. Charles Bidwell.
I think you made that up.
No, he's dead too. He used to own the Cardinals when they were in Chicago.
I would go Dan Rooney, probably.
Tom, you are a very smart man.
Yeah, they love the Rooneys.
Dan Rooney loves the Rooneys. It says here, I'll just read the little snippet here. While the entire Rooney family carries on the football tradition in Pittsburgh, Dan is still the man at the top, and he continues to operate what is arguably the most stable franchise in all of pro sports. I kind of have to agree with that.
There's no arguing that.
The Pittsburgh Steelers are probably the best run franchise, and I wouldn't even say one of the most fan-friendly franchises.
I can agree with that. The terrible towel, the entire just culture of Pittsburgh, Ben Roethlisberger's problems. Aside from that, they really cultivated a very Pittsburgh sports in general is a very familial thing. It's a big family culture.
They understand the blue collar working class people that live there.
Exactly.
And who have lived there for many years.
Brian, I want to get you in on this. Who do you think is the best and worst owner in the NFL?
Well, you have to go with, the Rooneys, but also I think with the Giants, Mara and the Tishes, they're great owners as well. You got to look for stability. And as a Jet fan, I hate to say it, but, Kraft's got to be up there as well. It's the stability where they're looking to really build a team and not grab the headlines. And you want a guy who is not going to be a general manager either. So someone like Jerry Jones needs to just stay to doing what he knows best, which is owning a team and maybe not being the general manager. So I think those are the guys who I see up there as kind of the top ones, and some of the guys who are maybe looking for more publicity as kind of the ones where maybe I'd lean away from in terms of the best owners in the league.
Well, who you got? Well, that's a very fair point, and that was a conversation we had earlier about owners and general managers and whether family members should get involved in the managing of the business of a football franchise or any sports franchise, really. But certain people are bred for it, and some people just are in the lucky birth club and just fall into those positions. But let's talk about a thing I'm not so lucky at, and that's fantasy football.
Ooh, yeah. No,
yeah,
not.
I am not good at fantasy football, and we'll pick the name of my fantasy football team in the league Foster and Soberman are in a little bit later in the show. But, Brian, you gotta help me, man. I'm screwed. I'm screwed in my league. One of the leagues I have Adrian Peterson. One of them I have Phillip Rivers and Eli Manning as my quarterback. It's causing me to drink, Brian. I'm scared, a little lonely. It's raining, crying.
Well, we got some help for you. So Phillip Rivers, I think he's a good fantasy quarterback. So you got some solace there. If you have Phillip Rivers, I feel comfortable with him. Is he going to be one of the top guys putting up, Peyton Manning numbers every single week? But no. But if, with quarterbacks, in my opinion, you can wait a little bit for them. So, for example, I have Andrew Luck. I took him in the fourth and fifth round in a couple of my leagues, and he's been put up great numbers. But when it turned, we had a huge hit to all the top flight running backs this week. So you had Jamal Charles go down. I had Jamal Charles, Ryan Matthews, and I had Nochan Moreno all in one league. And they were all starters for me. So I got brutally hit, but you have to be active in the waiver wire. That's really where it separates the teams that ultimately win versus teams that don't. Because let's be real. We all know that what happens before the season starts and in preseason is not what's going to happen towards the end of the year. So if you really want to be contending in the playoffs, you're going to have to be active in the waiver wire. So there was a lot of free agents out there and people you could pick up on the waiver wire this year. One guy I really like if you can stash, Jerick McKinnon from the – on the Minnesota Vikings. He is a guy who I think is going to see a lot more playing time. He's a dynamic runner from all the reports that I've heard. And if anybody had watched a little bit of the game, you saw Mike Asiata, kind of a plodding running back. So those are a couple guys that I would take a look out for. But if you need some help, you can look for a Donald Brown to replace Ryan Matthews. So you got to look for the guys who are going to step up when some of these couple guys go down. So if you need help, that's where I would go.
But I want to punch Philip Rivers in the face.
We all do, Matt.
He's so punchable.
He is. He's like the douchey frat guy on every college campus.
It's Pot Kettle Black because my face was voted most punchable in high school, junior high school, and pre-kindergarten. So
that explains the beard.
It certainly does, sweetie.
Yeah.
But
this is how bad Matt is at picking things. I'm just going to throw this out there. I asked Matt last week, should I go with Mike Wallace of the Miami Dolphins or DeSean Jackson of Washington? My gut was telling me DeSean Jackson, but the projections was going with Wallace. I asked Matt. He said, go with Jackson. I go with Jackson. He's out in like the first quarter.
Oh, yes, because I'm the all-knowing soothsayer to know when a man's going to get a debilitating injury. And second of all, I was trying to perfect the Gettysburg Address for a voiceover I was doing. So, yeah.
Wow, name dropper.
Yeah.
Gettysburg Address.
Who the hot?
I have a fantasy question. I'm actually pretty good at fantasy football, and so I'll just throw that out there. Modest as well.
Right.
Going for my third championship in 5 years this year, I had what I felt was my best draft ever. The problem is that my starting backfield was supposed to be, as I mentioned on the show last week, Adrian Peterson and Ray Rice. So obviously, I'm shopping for a running back. Now
I had Ray Rice. I will tell you that I had Ray Rice.
The wrinkle is that I scooped up Josh when the rumors started about the new NFLPA drug deal. I scooped up Josh Gordon. I'm loaded at wide receiver. I'm not concerned about wide receiver. What I want to do is trade him to somebody who is going to want him for, you know, the last month of our season in the playoffs. My question is, what do you think is a realistic goal in the running back department for a Josh Gordon, given the fact he's going to come back late? Obviously, you know, if he's good to go, he's one of the premier guys in the league, probably arguably second only to Megatron. But what do you think I should be realistically trying to target in terms of getting a running back value back for him right now?
Well, if you need a running back right now, I think that's going to be tough. Just because the people who are going to be looking to trade for you right now are probably going to be people that are not thinking down the line. So they're not thinking about stashing this person. If you could, what I would try to do is I'd try to hold on to him and then wait for people to get desperate towards the end of the year who really need someone to come in there right when he's ready to go. I think that's when you're going to get the most value for him. That's what I would do if you could do it, if you can pick up someone else to put in there. I don't think you're going to get the actual value, the highest value that you're going to get for him right now. I think if you can, you hold on to him.
All right. Sounds good.
Now, Brian, let's talk about your New York Jets. 1-1 on the season.
Mm-hmm.
One timeout away from really winning that game. That was not a fun thing. It was fun for those who aren't Jet fans, but if you're a Jet fan, you want to strangle your offensive coordinator. I think it's Marty Morningweg this year.
You know what? So many Jet fans are the pessimists. They want to come on and they want to say the same old Jets, right? That's the same thing you're hearing over and over again. I'm trying to come out with a different perspective on things and kind of curtail that negative energy. So what I like to take away from that play was what really happened was there was a protection that broke down or protection that was not correct in terms of the running back on that play. Geno Smith saw it, adjusted the protection, and Marty Morningleg didn't know that Geno adjusted the protection and came down running and calling a timeout. So for me, what I tend to look at that on and what I want to see on that is that Geno Smith recognized it, adjusted it, which shows growth, which we've seen in the first two games, I believe. Yeah, you've seen some mistakes in there, but I've seen growth through the offense, and I've seen growth in Geno Smith. So I would love to get the win there. I know the Jets aren't winning a championship this league. It's all about building a team. It's all about progressing, and that's what I'm going to look forward to. Now, that being said, if you look at the next five games on the Jets' schedule, they are brutal. So that win would have been huge. They need to come out of the first seven games with a record of at least 3-4 to have any shot at the playoffs. So it's a brutal loss, definitely. But, you know, at that point, too, they had already given up a 21-3 lead. So that play down the end there, you know, who knows what happens also if the D-back heard the whistle there, and if it really wouldn't have been a touchdown. There's so many factors. I'm not going to go back there and second guess. I'm going to try to, you know, put my green color glasses on, and I'm going to choose to, you know, take the good part out of that and hope that moving forward we still see more progression out of Geno that we've seen. And I'm more concerned about our defensive backs, but then who's a Jet fan, so.
Or a Giant fan. Fantastic metaphor with the green colored glasses. You're a natural. But I know a lot of Jets fans growing up in Brooklyn. I have a plethora of people who root for gangrene, which is a very, very, very funny thing if you look at the history and all the people that have dropped off that franchise like a gangrenous wound. But I saw a couple people saying, why aren't they starting Vic? Why aren't they starting Vic? Why is it, and this goes back to the conversation we had at the start of the show about Kirk Cousins. Everybody's, and in a larger extent for Giants fans, with Eli Manning, people wanting Ryan Nassib in. People don't understand that's not how it works. It's not that easy, and that just throwing Michael Vick in there is not the panacea for all your problems, and nor is throwing Kirk Cousins in. There's a reason why these people are the starters. Foster.
You don't want Ryan Nassib.
Of course I don't want Ryan Nassib.
Trust me. He was okay in Syracuse. You don't want him.
He's going to fold like a cheap card table. The Giants have drafted two good quarterbacks since they picked up Y.A. Tittle in a trade. And even then, their history of drafting quarterbacks wasn't all that good. I had a conversation the other day about the 50s Giants. Yes, I had an hour-long conversation about the 50s Giants. I have a problem.
Reflection. You were talking to the mirror.
No, I was actually talking to a future guest who will be talking about the history of the 4-3 defense. But we were talking.
Was there a lot of Emlyn Tunnell talk during this conversation?
No, but there should have been, because Emlyn Tunnell was fantastic.
One of the best nicknames ever.
Oh.
Emlyn the Gremlin. Anyway, sorry.
Wouldn't have happened today, because Deadspin would have bitched about it in a nanosecond. Yeah. But the Giants historically are not good at picking quarterbacks. Charlie Connerly, good quarterback. Lied about his age like he was Danny Almonte. Good, but Y.A. Tittle, fantastic quarterback. Former guest on this show. I consider him a friend. Shut up.
Wow, good at that name.
But we had him for the tail end of his prime. Phil Sims. Love the man. Wish he was family. But he's not Ken Stabler. He's not Joe Namath. He was a very competent guy. And for the love of God, we won a Super Bowl with Jeff Hostetler behind center. So Eli Manning, with very rare exception, is the greatest quarterback in the history of the New York Giants.
Hang on one second. Hang on one damn second. You, okay.
If you involve Danny Cannell, I will come to your house and pistol whip you.
No, I'm going to invoke this. How do you say Joe Namath, with one Super Bowl ring, is better than Phil Sims with two?
A, first Super Bowl, really good. Phil Sims, statistically, better than Joe Namath. I'm talking as a personality, as a, you know, a memorable figure. Aside from the fact that if you didn't see his face every Thursday and Sunday, you would think he's just some guy who works at a Walmart. He looks like an insurance salesman.
Hey.
Look, he's got blonde hair and blue eyes.
The 22 Weeks podcast does not condone any type of things against Walmart. Take your hate to Target.
But back to my point, why is it that Jet fans, Redskins fans, Giants fans, any fans in the NFL, Brian, are obsessed with having the other quarterback come in, and as soon as he comes in, he's the one that's going to be immolated, by the fan base?
You know, I think it really comes down to what's the quickest ways to change around a franchise? Quarterback change and a head coach change. So if your team's doing poorly, well, what's the quickest and most drastic change you can make? It's the quarterback. So that's always going to be the saving grace. It's always what's going to be – that's the biggest change you can make. If your team's playing poorly, it's bring in the other quarterback, because that's what's going to make the biggest splash. That's the guy who has the most influence over the entire game. And, you know, it's crazy to me when I see Giant fans, you know, complaining about Eli Manning. They should be worshiping the ground he walks on for bringing two Super Bowls as a Jet fan. I mean, if I had a quarterback come in here, win me one Super Bowl, that guy could walk on water. That guy would be – he would be forever, you know, he could do whatever he wanted to. He would be my guy. So, you know, I heard one story about a Giant fan of burning his Eli Manning jersey. And it just makes you sick as a Jet fan living in the same city that you hear these guys calling the talk radio and they're saying about how bringing Ryan Nassib. And it's just, it is comical that
it makes me sick.
New York fans are just awful to begin with.
They are terrible people, but it makes me sick when I know how much those jerseys cost, for God's sake.
So, yeah.
You hope it's one of those knockoff ones from China. That's what you can only hope for.
Well, let me tell you something about it. I just have to just throw this out there. It doesn't matter what team you root for in New York. As a fan, you always know better than the coach, manager, general manager, owner. That doesn't matter. You're in your head, you could run this team better. You know, I know a lot of people who say that about the New York Metropolitan Baseball Club.
Yo.
Yeah.
What about the Knicks? Good gravy. Okay.
All right, hold on. I'm gonna synthesize the New York sports fan with one impression. You know, Mad Dog, the Giants, Knicks, Rangers, Islanders, Devils, Net Raiders, they need this one guy from little Oneonta College. My sister goes there. The kid can throw, pass, shoot, dance. I saw him fight a bear once in a bar fight. He can do everything and anything. You just need to give him a chance. This guy, we paid all that money to. He can't pass. He can't shoot. He can't pass again. On that note, it's time for Who You Got?
By the way, that was probably the worst Francesa impression ever.
Listen here, dog. We go to the link, the prison down in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. The undefeated Philadelphia Eagles go up against Tom Garrett's Washington Redskins. Philadelphia favorited by 6.5. The over-under is at 50. Now, that's a little ridiculous. Tom, who you got?
Oh, boy. I really, really want to pick Washington in this game. My head says first start of the year for Cousins. This is by far a better team than he saw last week. I think the Eagles are pretty good. I think they probably have the best team in the division. But I'll tell you, the reason I think the Redskins have a chance is that their defense really has exceeded all expectations, even than I had. And mine were pretty lofty coming into this year. But just a quick stat for you. Washington has, in their first two games, they've given up one defensive touchdown in each game. Both of them were long touchdown passes allowed by a coverage mistake by a guy who was released, Bakari Rambo. Defense is pretty doggone good. Gun to my head, I picked the Redskins, but that's probably my heart talking.
Brian, who you got?
You know, I got to kind of piggyback off of that comment, too. You know, I think that I really like the way the Redskins defense is playing and playing really well lately. I got to take the Redskins in this game. I think the Eagles are the best team in that division. But right now in this game, I'll take the Redskins.
Foster, who you got?
I'm going to go with the Eagles for the reasons Tom was saying. been a long day. I think the Eagles are the better team.
You all right, buddy?
Yeah, he's
tired.
Yeah.
Brain fart.
I have an iPhone launch to work tomorrow.
Oh, no. Yeah, we're recording this right before the new iPhone comes out. So we may have an in memoriam before the start of this episode. Silverman, who you got?
I hate saying it, but I as much as I really want to see Washington do well tomorrow, I'm going with Philly.
Fly, Eagles, fly.
Don't do that!
Way to mediocrity. Fly, Eagles, fly.
That's
because
it.
You're
I'm
not
done.
Dan Snyder's team. If you listen to the lyrics, there's that itty-bitty change. It's going to be the Eagles. The over-under is going to be all screwed up. The win's going to be done on a safety. Next up, the mercy killing of the New York Football Giants against the Houston Texans. It's Ryan Fitzpatrick. It's Ryan bleeping Fitzpatrick.
Wait, we're not cursing on this show?
No.
That's no, fucking you've stupid. Already...
Yes, because we have a clean rating on iTunes, and I'd like to stay on iTunes, you jackass.
We'll have to bleep jackass.
You ragamuffin.
But it's Ryan bleeping Fitzpatrick against a crepe paper defense. They're going to give the ball to Arian Foster so many times. His name's going to be Riddell. It's not going to end well. The Giants are going to end up going 0-3. The Texans are favored by 2.
Well, nice save, Matt.
The line is 2 points.
The over-under is only 41.
You know what? Screw it. I'm taking the Giants. They got one in them. They got one in them. I don't think Fitzpatrick will be able to withstand the possibility of a pass rush. The Giants are the first existential team in the history of the NFL. Because everything they do is theoretical. They have a theoretical passing game. They have a theoretical running game. Their secondary is just an entire group of imaginary friends.
Matt, on paper, we're Super Bowl champions.
Dear Carl Jung, good evening. Help! That's right, a Carl Jung reference on a football podcast. And what? Soberman, who you got?
You know, Matt, you how little you forget that how many weeks did we wait last season for a win? I think it was 6.
I drank all of that away.
Yeah, so did I.
Oh, I but remember.
I remember doing the show with you. It was fun. but let me tell – seriously, I think the Giants break the curse this week. They win, and then – you know, Eli Manning gets picked up by a falcon, and I don't know what happens.
A literal wow. falcon?
Oh, my gosh.
Actually, it'll be Tony Gonzalez. He's going to be wearing his jersey when he's out there.
Brian, who you got?
You know, I got to go with you, too. I got to go with the Giants. I think that that secondary against Ryan Fitzpatrick, I just can't imagine the Giants going 0-3 in this game. I think they pick off Ryan Fitzpatrick. I'm going to say 3 picks. I'll go out and I'll be bold on my first show. So I say 3 picks for the Giants. I think that they got to win this game. I'd be surprised if they didn't, if they went to 0-3 again. That would just be another brutal start.
Misery loves company, eh, Foster?
Yeah. Cousin Arian is going to run all over them. But I see the Giants winning.
Tom, who you got?
Couple things kind of going in conflict here. I don't think the Texans are really good enough to be a 3-0 team. I think they're obviously much improved from last year, but I don't see them as like a 3-0 team. On the other hand, the Giants are just really struggling right now. I don't think that their new offensive scheme has really taken yet, which I know is not a profound kind of breaking news statement, but I think they're going to have trouble against the Texans defense. I think the Texans are going to win. As hard as that is to believe, Giants will be 0-3, Texans 3-0.
You're the
Texans
reason
were
why
not I, bad last season.
You're the reason why I can't sleep at night, Garrett. You know this, right? You know this. All right, I've had
a
little,
get that a lot.
I've had a little difficulty picking this, but it's time for the battle of who can care less. Whatever, never, amen. I think I have to go with the Vikings and the Saints. They're the battle of who can care less this week.
Really?
And I judge this because the Colts and Jaguars, my other nominee, has a lower line and is more important to the divisional battle than this game between an NFC North team and an NFC South team. And the over-under's 50. New Orleans is favored by 10.5. They're 0-2. They're favored by 10.5 points, and they're 0-2. This is the battle of who can care less this week. Also, Adrian Peterson's not playing. So even in general, even though there's a storyline, no one's going to give a damn about this game. Foster, who you got?
For the hilarity of the situation of watching New Orleans lose, I'm going to go with the Vikings.
Tom, who you got?
Wow. Saints.
Brian.
Yeah, you got to go Saints in this game at home.
Foster, I love you. Soberman.
Aw.
Who dat?
What?
I'm going with who dat. I'm going with the Saints.
Oh, who day.
Wow.
Who dat and who day. Hussein's kids. I thought they were dead.
Way to call the guy who can fire you an idiot on the air, Silverman.
And
Matt won't fire me. He knows I know the secrets.
I didn't know you were a self-help author. All right, we've been waiting to Sunday afternoon. Let's rapid fire this one. Broncos, Seahawks, we've got a rematch of the Super Bowl. The 12th man will be in full force. Tom, who you got?
Seahawks.
Soberman, the line's 4.5 for Seattle.
This is a tough one, but I'm taking Seattle in the rematch.
Brian, who you got?
I'll go Broncos.
Foster.
Until a team can prove they can win at home in Seattle, I'm not picking against Seattle at home.
I'm taking Seattle at home. Also, Wes Welker, if he does come back this week, he won't be the Wes Welker we want him to be. If you're a fantasy football owner or just a fan of football in general, Hunter S. Thompson will not have a good game this week. He'll ride the Pride Highway back to Denver, going 2-1. Seattle will go to 2-1, and the over-under is 49. I don't see them meeting that. And we've been waiting all day for Sunday night. It's the Steelers and the Panthers. Foster, you have a 3.5-point edge on the Steelers heading into this one. Who you got?
Well, I got the Panthers, but I live in a house where I can't really say that too loud.
Thomas, who you got?
Oh, I'm sorry. Did you say Thomas?
Yes.
I'm sorry. That's my fault. I have to say one of the storylines early in the year that has surprised me most is the Steelers look really bad. And they were lucky to beat the Browns. And they looked awful against the Ravens. I think the Panthers are going to be a pretty good team again this year. Steelers, I don't know what's up with them, but I'm going Panthers.
Is the fact that the Panthers are in line for regression going to be a positive for them, Brian?
I'm sorry, say that again?
Do you think that nobody believes in this factor will kick in for the Panthers after everybody thought they were going to have a big regression year?
You know, I'm not sure if it's that. I just think that, you know, they have a good defense. I like the Panthers in this game. I think that they're just a better team than the Steelers. The Steelers defense is not what it once. The defense was not what it once was. So I think more effective is just that it's, you know, I think the Panthers are just a better team at this point.
Soberman, who you got?
Is Cam Newton healthy?
Yes.
Panthers.
And it's time for our final game of the week because Brian is our special guest on the show this week, and also Marvin Williams, our consistent 70-second mic.
Marvin's got the bye week.
Yes, Marvin's got the bye week. It's his New York Jetropolitans going up against the Chicago Bears at MetLife Stadium. Brian, who you got?
You know, I got to go with the Jets in this one. I got to go with them. I'll be at the game, so hopefully I'll get a close-up view of the Jets playing well. So I think the Jets win on Monday night. I'm a little scared about Alshon Jeffries and Brandon Marshall. Actually, I'm not scared. I'm terrified. But, you know, I got to go with the Jets on this one. But picking with my heart a little bit here, I think the Jets can get enough of a pass rush to disrupt Cutler. And I think the Jets can hopefully run the ball, slow the pace down a little bit of the game, and strike down the field a couple times, picking the Jets.
Tom, do you think the Bears having the better quarterback will be an advantage?
It usually is, as a matter of fact. I think the Jets really impressed me last week. Even though they should have won that game, I really thought the Packers were going to just destroy them. And they, you know, like I said, I mean, that was a should have been a Jets win. And they more than held their own on the road in Green Bay. This week, gosh, I would love to take the Jets at home, but the Bears winning in San Francisco, pretty doggone impressive. I got to go with the Bears.
Foster.
I'm going to go with the Bears, too. I think the Jets are still trying to put the pieces together. I don't think it's going to be a bad season for them, but I don't see them winning this game.
Soberman, who you got?
Well, let's see. The over-under is 45.5. I'm not sure if that's points or arrests at the game.
It's a push.
I'm going with the Jets. I think the Jets actually. I'm going to say this. I think the Jets are for real. I kind of do.
Defensively, I think the Jets are for real. On offense, I'm not necessarily sure yet. I'm battling this one in my head. I'm going to take the Jets just because I think that defense is such a positive for that team. I wouldn't be surprised if Cutler, you know, divided up that defense and sliced them up because they have two great wide receivers. But I'm going to go with the Jets here by a scant amount. And that does it for Who You Got this week. I'd love to thank my panel of pigskin prognostication for the week. Tom Garrett, you can find him on Twitter at The Access of Ego. You can find his columns, his articles, and a whole lot more at TheAccessOfEgo.com, HogsHaven.com, and Cover32.com. And also thank you to Matt Foster, my running buddy, my riding partner, the Madman of Azkaban. You can follow him on Twitter at Matthew D. Foster. And also just give him a hug if you see him.
Yeah, and those of you who have already started following me from the show, I'm sorry.
Has that happened?
I've gotten a couple. I think so. I don't know.
Hey, good. Like, look at that.
I've gotten followers I don't recognize, and they're pretty much just getting my Xbox stats.
You can follow Alex Soberman on Twitter at AlexSobe123 on the Twitter machine. You can follow Marvin Williams at Muscleman Dancington. And also, Brian, where can we follow you on Twitter?
Actually, not on Twitter at the moment.
Wow. Well, we're going to I'm gonna have to come up with an obviously fake one for you. Cat Dad.
Hey, idiot, we didn't pick a team name for you.
Well, then, I've been hoisted on my own petard.
You'll find out the name next week on the 22 Weeks.
On that note, you can follow me on Twitter at I'm Matt Ryan. Also, I'mMattRyan.com for dates and information on ways you can find me. You can download this show on PlaceToBeNation.com every Saturday. Every Saturday, you can also find us on Stitcher, on iTunes, and on this website, 22weekspodcast.wordpress.com. Click that Amazon link in the episode description. Not only do you get great deals from Amazon.com, but you help keep this show going. This is a fan-supported podcast, and we want you to support the show as much as we can. We see the subscribers rising every single day, and we want to thank you for being a part of 22 Weeks. For everybody here, for Marvin Williams, who's on assignment, I'm Matt Ryan. Keep on listening. We'll see you next week right here on 22 Weeks.
This was a production of Gotta Say It Media. Executive producers Matthew Ryan and Marvin Williams. For more information, go to 22weekspodcast.wordpress.com.